Right on.
Happy birthday, Omar. What a deal, huh? Most alcoholics can't do anything for 20 seconds, much less 20 years. So what an honor and privilege to be here on your birthday as well, man. What a tribute to Alcoholics Anonymous. So grateful you're here. I talked to Omar this morning. He was telling me he'd been up since 3:30, been doing it for 20 years. What worked when he got sober, he's not experimenting today. It's a big deal. Our book talks about, you know, the desperate experiments that we go through. And so grateful you're here today, brother. Thanks for spending time with me here. Somebody said, Cliff, you're a self-disclosed racist and homophobe. Well, that's true. That's the way I am, you know. That's what I bring to Alcoholics Anonymous when I get here. I'm convinced of this today, that whatever you bring to Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever your problems are, at some point in time, they get up from across the room, they come to you and say, will you sponsor me? And that's how that works. First guy that ever came to sponsor me, black guy. Second guy that ever asked me to sponsor me, gay man. And that's what happens here. And Alcoholics Anonymous smooths the rough edges out of our life. And they softens our heart. If we're willing to do the actions outlined in the book, what we do is we begin to see humanity different. At least from my experiences. I get to see people as people and part of the human experience. And so, that's what AA has taught me. So I've got this connection with God. I'm willing to do something different, but there's a problem that I'm blocked off. And I'm separated from, not because God's not good, it's because I think I'm so bad. And what I know today, there's good in the worst of us and bad in the best of us. That's just how we roll here. And so it's kind of like, I think of it sometimes when I think about alcoholism and our relationship with God and how we get here and what we do once we get here is, it's kind of like we'll run to everybody to try to help us figure out what's wrong with our car. Something's wrong with my car. We'll get something in the mail that says, hey, there's a manufacturer's defect. And you need to return it to the manufacturer. But yet I'll try to go around and just say, what do you think's wrong with my car? Can you help me with my car? I got a letter that says it's a manufacturer's defect. But I'll go around to everybody else trying to figure out how to fix it. Man, I'm not even a mechanic, and I'll get out and try to figure out what's wrong with it. I don't want to follow the directions. I don't want to do that, right? And what I've discovered, at least for me, is that I've got some kind of manufacturer's defect. And I've got to continue to return it to the manufacturer in order for me to keep my car running right. And when we come to in this part in our lives, in our journey in Alcoholics Anonymous, we get to this spot where we have figured out that we are the problem. The jig is now up. It's no longer the booze that's the problem. As a matter of fact, as we transition from we agnostics into the three pertinent ideas, it tells us drinking with bottles were just a symbol for us to some deeper problem in the great bait and switch of Alcoholics Anonymous, some deeper problem. And I begin to learn and get some inkling the idea that, oh my God, it's really me, that I'm the problem in this deal. And I think we begin in step 4 and 5 to really in 6 and 7 to really flush out about getting right with self. 1 through 3 is about getting right with God. 4 through 7 is about getting right with self. This idea that what is it about me? What I want to do is say it's you. It's them, it's him, it's her, it's the man, it's the job, it's whatever. That's my problem. You know, I swear that alcoholics are these people. We can be sitting in jail and say, how'd you get here? We'll say it's my mechanic's fault. What do you mean it's your mechanic's fault? I took my car to get my taillight fixed. And he said he fixed it. And so I'm driving, and I stopped at the stop sign, but a policeman pulled me over because my brake light wasn't running. That's why I'm in jail. You're in jail because of brake light? No, I was drinking, but but had the mechanic fixed the brake light, I wouldn't be here, right? I mean, it's somebody else's fault. I mean, I want to find some fault in somebody else, and yet our book tells us that I set the ball rolling. I'm the guy that always puts it in motion. And when we get to step 4 and looking at, we really try to begin to confirm and see the evidence of what we've learned in 3. That is that my gosh, it is me, that I'm this guy that wants to be the director. And we do these inventories. We talk about resentments. We talk about fears, bad sex conduct, which I'm sure nobody in here has ever had, bad sex conduct, and then these harms to other people. And I don't want to do an exhaustive talk about that because we would be here for the rest of the day and tomorrow just about that. But I want to talk about a couple of pieces in that inventory process and about sharing that inventory process that was really important to me and my experience through all that. When the book talks about these ideas, fancied or real, resentments, fancied or real, sometimes I've told the story so long, I believe it to be true.
Right.
I've just told it from my perspective so long that I believe it's true. And it can look something like this. Like I could be going down the street in a hurry trying to get somewhere. And Sergio's headed the other way and he's in a hurry. And we're going down the street, we're passing by, and he looks at me and says, "Hey, Cliff, nice tie." And he just keeps going, I keep going. And in the instant, I think, nice tie, what the hell did he mean by that? He's giving me a slight, right? And so for the next 3 weeks, I plot 782 ways to kill Sergio. Right? Just plot his death. And then what I do is I get in and I think about various scenarios. I'll see him, he'll say this, I'll say that. The book describes that as a brainstorm. And I get into those brainstorms about how it's going to look, what's going to happen. And I'm ready. I got 782 scenarios. I'm ready. And then sure enough, I see Sergio again. And we're not in quite as big a hurry this time. And he comes up to me and says, "Hey, Cliff, I was in such a hurry last week. You know, my brother loves your ties. Where did you get that one so I can get him one? Because I know he'd really like it." And I got nothing for that. I mean, I've been plotting his death, you know. I've got nothing for that. But that's the way my mind works. My mind traps me in scenarios that's not even real. They're things that never happened. And when I got to those resentment lists, I told the story so long about my dad, about my mom, about how I was this kid that, you know, just this great scenario, how they had kept me down, that I never got to do anything. I just had this whole deal that really, if you would have heard my story, it really would have come in two parts. The first part was sad, and the second part was pitiful. I mean, just bad, you know? And I just see myself as this huge victim. And here's what I can tell you. Victims never recover in Alcoholics Anonymous. Victims never recover here. As long as it's your fault, their fault, his fault, I'll never get better. And what I believe for the inventory process for me is a way for me to get free. Is the beginnings, the first step of me moving forward through this life. If I really believe who God says he is, if I really trust that process, because that's what a big chunk of it is I'm willing to take the actions necessary to move me closer, to clear out the debris. I talked last night just briefly to talk about the hole in the soul. And some people talk about that in AA. I've talked about that in AA. And I'm not here to dispute that if that's what you believe. And I used to believe that. But I'm not sure that's right today. For me. Just for me. What I believe for me today is that through my time, for the 41 years before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had accumulated resentments, fears, bad sex conduct, harm to others, and I stacked all that stuff inside. And what it did was it kind of what Bill described, this mountain that threw a shadow in my life. Threw a shadow. What does a shadow look like? It looks like a hole. The shadow appears to be a hole. But through the inventory process, when I begin to write that stuff down, it becomes real to me. I see in black and white for the first time. And as I move through those columns, and let me just say something. I believe this, that a really solid four step takes about 2 months, 3 days, 4.5 hours. Emphasis on the 4.5 hours. Right? Because I'm going to tell you this. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, don't make any mistake about it. I knew everybody. I knew everybody. You know why I knew everybody? Every time you get me drinking, I'll tell you about them. I've done a lot of fifth steps. Never got past the third column. But I've done a lot of them. And I tell them about what they did to me. Who they were, what they did to me. The third column looked what I was going to do to get back to them. Because it's never about just getting even. I got to get one better. It's just never about getting even with them. I got to get better than them. So that when we talk about step four, when somebody says, I'm working on my fourth step, you know they're not doing nothing.
Right.
They're not doing nothing. They ain't even started. They don't have a paper. Right? They don't got to do nothing. If you're working on your fourth step, you're almost done. Because I know everybody. I know everybody. You know why? They ride with me every day. Every day. You know, we talk about they're prisoners. No. They got me prisoner. Those people that I hold a resentments against, they're free. They're sleeping good every night. I'm the guy that's a prisoner. And you know what the crazy? I'm the jailer with the keys. I'm keeping myself in prison because I keep doing that. Resentments. Anger revisited. Joe and Charlie used to talk about that. You know, I used to like the analogy of the telestrator. John Madden, Sunday NFL football, right? Guy gets hit out of bounds. Let's see that again. They'll do it 20 times. Look at this right here. I can just see John Madden. And that's it. I do it to myself over and over and over again. I replay the tape over and over and over. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. I'll say this, get that. If I ever get back in front of that guy, I'm going to do this over and over again. And so a good four step, yeah, about 4 hours, you should be able to knock that out all the way through. Because we know everybody. Anybody says, well, I got to think about that. It's a liar. Because what they want, we say things like this. Well, I want it to be perfect, which is just another word for procrastination. This is about best efforts. You know, the 12 steps talks about we try to carry this message. I want you to think about this. If you go to your job on Monday morning, boss comes in and says, how'd you do today? You say, well, I've tried. You go, try harder tomorrow. Right? What we do here is we just do the best we can do. My experience is if I did a four step, may not be the last one I do. You can call it a 10 step, whatever. I don't worry so much about that today. Are you doing the spiritual exercise and are you getting the benefit? That's the deal. That's really the deal here. Just call it four, call it five, 10, whatever. I don't care. Am I doing it? And so I think the real deal is I need to download the garbage. You know, I need to get down to bed wetting and the booger eating. And I need to share that with somebody. I need to share the stuff that's holding me prisoner. Come to find out that I'm not the only guy that touched another man's junk before I came to AA. I didn't know that, man. But it held me prisoner. It held me prisoner because it's so shameful. Right? I don't know. It's just kids being kids. I think there's something wrong with me. You know? I think there's something wrong with me. And that's the kind of stuff I'll take to the grave. Because I can't let you know that about me. Because what will you think of me if I tell you that? What will you think of me? And I think the biggest thing that's a detriment to alcoholics is when it talks our book about people, institution, and principles. We just kind of gloss over that. And a principle is what we sometimes refer to as an old idea. Baby elephant ideas that hold us prisoner here. And so what I do for my guys is I broke out that inventory separate apart from the resentment inventory and just created a whole new that just said this, what's the old idea? And the second column, is it true or false? And then from there, it was all just right out of the book. All right out of the book. Because what happens, I believe for a guy like me, and I'll tell it this way because maybe you'll see it. 1977, I started school at Oklahoma State University. Took a computer science class. 1977, a computer then, it would take two rooms this size to hold the computer. And they had punch cards. And you had to punch the cards, and if you put them in the card reader, it would read it. And way over there on the other side of the room, there was this green and white folding paper. It would come. If you did it right, it would come out. Stack of paper, computer paper. Computer science. Big as this room. So if I get hit in the head and I go into a coma and I go into a coma till 2023 and I come out, right? Suddenly I wake up in this world and somebody says, hey, man, here's your computer. Any doubt what that is? Here's your computer. First question I got, where's the card reader? Where's the card reader? Because that's my old idea about computers. And so I start looking for how does that work? Where do I put the cards? And that's what happens in the material world when we get to what the book says. Now we've entered the world of the spirit. And I bring these old ideas about where's the card reader, and I try to make it work here. And I continue to run into problems I continue to run into problems in my romantic life because I have this old idea about what that looks like. When I was a kid, 10, 11 years old, my brother was 10 years older. I got exposed to pornography. I got an old idea about women and sex and how that looks. I remember going down to the fire station where he worked on Saturday afternoon. They'd have them old 8mm reels, no sound. But I'm telling you, I'm coming up short every time. I promise you, right? I'm watching those and I get an old idea about sex that's troubled me from then to now. You know the thing I tell you about porn and Alcoholics Anonymous? It's AA's dirty little secret. We change the way we feel, but we don't have to change our sobriety date. We sat next to some cute girl in AA. We're married. We're in a committed relationship. But we're going to help her because she needs help, right? Obviously. And, you know, I'm 4 or 5 years sober. I'm a damn guru as far as she's concerned, you know. I really liked what you shared in the meeting today. Damn right you did, right? Let me have your number. I might can help you, you know. And so suddenly I'm texting with this little gal. And I begin to live a double life again. But nobody, I mean, you know, I'm not drinking, changing how I feel. Because you know how this is. She just texts and says, hey, I really appreciate you. Could you just call me and we could talk about it? And I get that euphoric bubble. You know how it is? Just before you go, I feel about to drink. I get the bubble. I feel the sense of ease and comfort. So what happened? I'm moving myself away from God once again. Every decision we make once we come to Alcoholics Anonymous leads us in one of two directions. Closer to the drink or closer to God. That's it. Every decision we make here. And until I'm willing to sit down and look at these old ideas, if I'm willing to look at those are what helps me flush out and begin to get free here. And I'm not talking for some kind of moral or spiritual hot tub. I told you, the sex deal still haunts me some today. I'm not trying to tell you here that this is what I've done. I'm pure as driven snow. I struggle. I struggle with that sometimes. Sometimes I leave biological material in my hotel room. You know what I'm saying? Say it. Not here. Obviously, they have the sperm police here, man. But that's not the guy that I want to be. That's not the guy God created me to be. And so I have struggles. And what does that help me to do? It keeps me on the path. Try to, one more time, to surrender to God. How do I know these things? Because I've done that work in the inventories. J. Mack, he talks about Scott Redmond. There's a piece of business on the horizon. We keep it in the clouds, but it keeps coming up. Eventually, I got to make it a piece of business between me and God. These defective characters that cause us to manufacture this personal power, right? Give us this sense of power. You know, fleeting though it is, you know, but it gives us that sense of power. I remember when I really did a valid, true four-step, really one. You know, in the 80s, they sent me to treatment because they thought I had a drinking problem and a small accelerant problem, that non-addictive cocaine. And just small, very tiny problem with that, you know. They could have just given me the deed to Peru, man. That's what they could have done. That. But I didn't think that was my problem. See, I thought my problem was a back problem. They're on it. I need to go get them off. And so I went. And so I can only hear this when I'm able to hear it. And there may be people here today, you know, that they're not hearing this. And that's okay. I'm going to tell you something. You know, sometimes I talk about Alcoholics Anonymous and it appears to people that I'm discounting meetings. I'm not a guy that today, the meetings were very important to me early on. I was going like 2 or 3 meetings a day because I think that's important. You got to build a foundation. But the real key, I believe, for being Alcoholics Anonymous is what's contained in the book and the actions indicated there, and I got to do that. And people sometimes think, well, you're anti-meeting. I'm not that. I'm not anti-meeting, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, sometimes we'll say to the very brand new guy, well, hey, let's go to a meeting. And if you read that book, that's not what it says. It says we got to do the work in the book, right? If you really read the book, the fellowship comes after the steps. As a matter of fact, in the old days, you didn't even get to come to the meeting till they were convinced you'd done the work and you were ready to surrender and did it. And what they did, they sponsored you into the meeting. Right? Upper room, that's right. When Dr. Bob was satisfied, you get to come in, right? And I'm not. It's not an indictment on meetings. I'm just saying to you that we, the public perception of AA, we've created a public perception that recovery's in the meetings. Recovery's where the fellowship is. Why do we go to meetings? To catch the new guy. Why do I go to my home group? I know what all those knuckleheads are going to say there. I go to my home group for the new guy that walks in. That's why I go to AA meetings. I go to different AA meetings during the course of the week. Why? Not because I feel like I need a meeting. I don't even know what that means. When people say, I need a meeting, I don't know what that means. What have you missed? What have you missed here if you need a meeting? If I need a meeting, what I really need is I need to go to a treatment center, talk to a new guy there, and take him through the book. That's what I need. Because the book's very clear about what no human power can relieve my alcoholism. What happens, I go to a meeting and puke, feel better. Right? And now you're all left to clean that up. That's what my sponsor's for. My sponsor's to go puke the problem. I come to AA to give the solution and tell the new guy how I got out of the jackpot. Right? That's what it's here for. But if I don't go through the steps, if I don't analyze and do a thorough four-step to do what it says to get down to what causes and conditions. What's the name of the hammer that hits my knee that makes my leg go out? That's what we're talking about. Not that I'm a liar. Why did you lie? It's not that I'm selfish. Give me examples of where you were selfish. Why were you that way? What's the name of the hammer that hits my knee that makes my leg go out? Why is it in this condition, in these circumstances, you lie? Why is that? What's the root cause of that? What's the cause and the condition? It's just not enough that you get to the end of the inventory and say, yeah, I was selfish. Yeah, I was dishonest. It's not to check the box. It's why. Why am I that way? What causes me to do that? And until I'm willing to look at that and see how I'm playing God in everybody's life and willing to sit down with another man and share that, share it. I think all of us, what we really desire, the internal piece of us, we want to be able to stand in front of another human being naked, share our stuff, and know that we're loved, that we're okay. When I sit down with Judd, and he told me on the day I went through my fifth step, he said a prayer with me. He said a prayer that, you know, God give Cliff the courage to say whatever he needs to say and the wisdom to let me share whatever I need to share to help him down his path. It's the prayer I still say to every man that I have the privilege to do that with. And he told me, he said, now, Cliff, you've come in here today and there's stuff in on your fourth step that you've either written in code, because it could fall into enemy hands. You've written in code or you haven't written down at all. And he said, that will kill you. And he shared something with me that I'm sure he believed was the darkest part of his life. And I'm at a crossroads. You know, our book, several times it talks about, but before we go into step three, it says, we stood at the turning point. We stood at the turning point. We've got this choice to make in our life. Am I going to get closer to God or closer to the drink? And I'm going to tell you, I'd been 41 years riding hard. And in that turning point, I thought, what have I got to lose? What have I got to lose? And I just shared with him, you know, shared with what I thought was the darkest piece of my path, which I've already shared freely with you here today. It's on tape. And you know what he did? He looked at me. You know what he said? I love you anyway. I love you anyway. And we just went right on. See, that's the deal here. I love you anyway. There's nothing we can do to make God love us any less. Nothing. What we want, what we need is this human connection. I need a God with skin on from time to time. I need to be able to sit down with somebody and share those parts of my life that are fractured, that are broken. That in 6 and 7, when we get there, I mean, you look at the book when you get to 6 and 7, what do they look like? The free space on the bingo card, man. Two paragraphs. My God, this is going to be a breeze, right? Except if you really read that, what it says is that we found these objectionable. And I'm going to tell you, I've run sometimes 22 years on things that I haven't found objectionable yet. chinks in my armor, defects of my life that I haven't found objectionable, that I'm willing to surrender to God. And we all have them. I mean, it's just the way it is. I haven't seen enough pain in my partner's eyes. I haven't seen enough pain in the people in my life yet to be able to surrender, because I'm still getting something out of it. But I haven't seen it, because that's the great motivator for me, the pain. We see that pain early on. Swear to God, I'll never do this again. I promise I'll never do this again. Promise, swear, I'll never do it again. And what happens to a guy like me? I get a few days apart from that. I get to feeling better. What's the thought that comes to me? Wasn't that bad. Wasn't that bad. But when we get sober, what happens is we have to deal with the raw emotions of our behavior. We have to deal with the reality of who we are and what we are. I no longer can medicate that. Well, if I'm still into the text and the little cute girl next to me, that will pacify that, you know. But the real deal here is the walk closer to the power. The real deal here is this connection to God, of cleaning all that stuff out, that the channel's open. I believe that the day I was born, the channel to God, whatever you want to call it, whatever you believe in, that's what I'm talking about here. That channel was as free and open as it's ever been. And I began to stack this stuff in it to block myself off from this power. And I become so blocked off over time that I lose that faith of a child, that the world gets on me. When the world gets on me, I believe it's up to me. I'm operating on self-will, headlong in, self-directed. And when I get here, I get to unpack all that and try to get that channel as clear as possible. It's the only way I can maneuver and run around this life, is to return to the manufacturer. Because what happens is I clog it up again. I have to continue to return the manufacturer to unclog it. You know, it's like an old carburetor that gets something in the filter, right? It's blocked in the filter. I don't know that. I just heard that. But it's blocked in the filter, right? And I got to blow that thing out, wash it off, put it back in. I'm going again. Yeah, that deal. I got to return to the manufacturer because my filter. Why? Because I'm human. Why? Because I'm alcoholic. And so what my job here is to try to get through transparency. That's the beautiful thing here. The beautiful thing here is we get an opportunity to stand naked in front of another man, share our truth, share our darkest secrets, and they look at us and they tell us a thing that we've been wanting to hear our whole life. I love you anyway. I love you anyway. Thanks, guys.